This is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book, the perfect place for writers to write. And today, it's a very special hour. I'm not going to stop for any commercials because I have a guest. I want him on the program for every minute I can get him. Peter Riva is a man who wears many hats. He is an award-winning author. He is a literary agent, and he is the grandson of one of my favorite Hollywood stars, Marlene Dietrich. And I'm so happy to welcome him back to Joy on Paper. He's been here before. And one of the things that I have to tell him is that during the pandemic, one of his books really kept me going. Hi, Peter.
Hi, Patsy. How are you?
Okay, I'm fine. And I am so happy to have you back on the program because I really wanted to tell you how very, very much your book called A Tribal Rumble, A Safari Campfire Tale, just kept me going through the pandemic. The Audible version. Now, of course, I had read the wonderful book itself because, you know, I need to read the book. But when I got the Audible version, I tell you, Peter, it's fantastic.
He did such a good job, the narrator. He really did. And I was quite amazed at how his voice resonated with the tone of the story. It was excellent.
Oh, he captured the story, and it is such a beautiful story. And I often tell my listeners about it and tell them they have to listen to it because it really will change you in so many ways. And the story is fascinating. We'll talk about that. We're going to talk about all your hats. I mean, you wear a lot of hats.
I do.
I know you're a busy guy. But I thought what we do, let's talk first, put on your literary agent hat, and we'll talk about that. Then I want to talk about you as an author and about your wonderful books. And I know that you have a contract for two more of this wonderful series that I love. So, and then I couldn't have you on without talking to you about your grandmother, who means so much in my life, too. So let's start with a literary agent.
Well, it's been a busy time. You know, COVID really did shake up the publishing world. Everybody suddenly found out that they could be as effective working from home. And I think there's going to be a lot of office space empty in Manhattan in the coming years. I found that people really got re-engaged with reading, which was a wonderful thing. Book sales, both electronic books, audiobooks, as well as print books, remained consistently strong all the way through COVID, which is to be expected, but everybody thought they'd fall off after COVID ended, and they haven't, which is great. I think a lot of people have rediscovered the joy of reading. And the joy for me particularly was that the books that are doing the best in the marketplace in this last year have not been political. And I think a lot of people are getting reconnected with the truths that can be in fiction and also, of course, nonfiction. And it's just a joy to discover the world that you can through books.
Well, you as a literary agent, you get this wonderful opportunity to help authors on the path, which is, you know, here on Joy on Paper, I always encourage people to write. And I was so happy when during the pandemic and in last November, so many of my listeners did NaNoWriMo, National Novel Writing Month, and five of them finished their books. And
wow.
Now, you know, they've of course, after the holidays, after the first of the year, they come back to their 50,000 words that they wrote during November, which is something, you know, really, it's something to be very proud of. But now,
oh, absolutely.
Now they have to understand there's another job that comes next. It's called editing and then hopefully finding a literary agent. So,
well, remember what Hemingway said, writing is rewriting. I don't think Hemingway ever did less than 12 or 15 different versions of his work until he decided it was good enough to share with people. And that is the, you know, I hate to say it's not a chore. It's such a joy to go back over what you've written and look at it again and again and again. And I always encourage our authors no matter how accomplished they are, to when they finish the manuscript and they say, okay, Peter, this is ready to go, I say, well, sit on it for 2 weeks, then read it out loud. Because a lot of people forget that the way words play in our head has a certain rhythm, a cadence. And if you can't read your work out loud, it means the reader is not going to have that flow of words in their head. And that communication, that generosity between author and reader, is really critical. So it's such a fun thing to go back and read your own words out loud, even if you're only reading it out loud to an empty room. But if you read it out loud, then you can see, oh, that's not working, that sentence is a little long, or this bit short, I have to put in another syllable here. You can adjust your work to be its best possible for the next person who's going to have access. And that's long before you consider trying to find a literary agent. and when, Patsy, because I know a lot of your people are going to want to know, well, how do we find a literary agent and all the rest? The first thing you've got to do is decide which other authors in your local bookstore fit the genre, fit the taste of the reader that you want to attract. So if you're writing a thriller or a World War II novel or whatever it may be, go to the local bookstore and look at books that you think, yes, this writer is it tackling the same area that I'd like to talk about, or the same morals that I'm talking about, or the same page-turning excitement? Whatever it is that links you to other authors who are in the marketplace, make a note of those publishers and the title of the book and the author, and then you go to a site which I use a lot called Publishers Marketplace, and you look for who was the editor of those books. And then you can contact that editor directly. Also, it'll tell you who the agent was on those books, and you can contact those agents as well, so that you're trying to appeal your work to a receptive audience.
Exactly. You know, this is what I've been telling the ones who finished the NaNoWriMo. I said, you know, the editing process is actually, it's so much fun. If you have to face it, you know, that with a smile, because you have this opportunity, you're creating something and playing with words and moving them around and just getting that right feel. It is such an exciting part of being a writer.
Yeah, I kind of liken it to, you know, parents of the first baby, and they look at the baby and they're thrilled to death with it. And then how much time do those parents spend finding just the right clothing or just the right booties or just the right hat? It's that fine tuning you need to do. You're not throwing your novel out. You're not saying, oh, I have to redo it. What you're saying is, how can I make this better? How can I make this more the way I want it to be? And it's like dressing your baby. You're going to buy the clothes you like, and you're going to dress the baby up to be as pretty as you can make that baby to be. So do the same thing for your work and treat it with that same love and respect for the work that you put in already, and it'll be more acceptable to the next people who get to see it.
Now, as a literary agent, of course, you get, how many submissions do you get a week?
I'm trying to cut it down. I've been putting warnings to people that we're not really looking, so I'm only getting about 6 a week now.
Oh, that's all. Okay. So nowadays, of course, they come electronically, we get them in emails,
right.
Not like the old days where you used to get the whole manuscript.
I still get that occasionally, Patsy, and that's always a little disturbing, because that's, you know, people send me something that's 3 pounds in weight and they've put their heart and soul into it, and you don't want to just reject it. But you know, the problem I have, and frankly, the problem all literary agents have, is that we've been made the gatekeepers, and we don't really want to be the gatekeepers. We want to be the person, like the basketball coach, who makes your play better. But instead of which, they're saying the team can't even get on the field unless the coach says they're fit. So we have to look at these works that are submitted to us in the same series of criteria that the publisher is going to look at them. And the publishers realize that in America, the first 10 pages of any novel, particularly, has to be true to the voice of the author, has to be true to the characters, and has to give a good idea of what's to come. And it's an unfortunate fact that that criteria is governed by the book buyers. And here's the thing that authors don't know. No book is ever bought by the person who's reading it. Books are bought by publishers who then sell them to book buyers. Book buyers, for instance, the book buyers at Barnes & Noble, they get somewhere between 250 and 350,000 submissions a year. They don't have time to read these books. So the criteria everybody has set is, we'll read the first 10 pages. If the two-paragraph blurb on the book is exciting enough, we'll read the first 10 pages and make a decision on what we're buying. That's why I say to my authors, be very sure that the first 10 pages of your whatever work it is, whether it's narrative nonfiction or fiction, make sure that it will appeal consistently throughout the whole book and that it sets in place the tone, voice, speed, pace, characterization of your work. And one other thing I want to point out here. Dialogue should never be used to advance the plot. Dialogue should be reinforcement of characterization. And people who put dialogue in the first few pages, thinking that the reader is going to understand the character of the person, they won't. Because until you have given us a full description of who the proponents are, if I read dialogue, my brain will make up an image of who I think is speaking and how they're speaking. And later on in the book, I may find out that that description was wrong, and then I stop believing the voice of the narrator. So it's always better to establish in the reader's mind who the characters are before you start having them speak.
Now, when you're getting these emails nowadays, that subject line, what does that do for you? Do people write
subject
just,
line
I,
is
I
never
a submission or
yeah no
should
yeah
it be
the
catchy?
Subject line. Well, you know, I always suggest to authors that what they do is write a. Remember that most literary agents are not 18-year-olds, so therefore write to a literary agent as you would your parent. And in the subject line, say, I would like to make a submission to you. I have a novel. And then in the text, you say, here's a brief description of what I've written. May I make this submission to you? And you can include there a little bit about who you are. You know, I'm a graduate from Yale University, whatever it may be. And that way, you're soliciting the time of the literary agent to consider accepting your submission. Well-written appeals like that invariably will get you a response of, sure, send it along, and here are our criteria that we need. And each literary agency has criteria that they require from the author. I have a list of 10 things that I send authors. I need all this information if you want me to look at your proposal properly. And that helps the author know, okay, that's what I'm going to be putting together. My biography, what are called comps, books that are in the same genre of mine, how many words my novel is, or nonfiction, is it complete or not complete, how many, you know, and so on and so forth. There's a series of criteria so that we can evaluate the proposal properly and go from there. And, you know, it's a step process. You don't want to assume. And the other thing is, authors really have to remember that they're asking a literary agent to become, in essence, a partner. They're not hiring a literary agent. A literary agent doesn't make any money, hopefully, doesn't charge money, as we don't. A literary agent doesn't make any money until the book actually makes money. So consequently, you're asking somebody to put their time, their effort, their expertise, and their entree into the business at your disposal for the project that you're proposing. So it's as well to remember, if you're an author, that you're not looking to hire a literary agent. You're asking a literary agent to partner up with you on your project.
So now with you, what's new with you? What are the books, the authors that you're dealing with right now?
Well, Mary Glickman is without a doubt one of America's finest authors. She broke through about 10 years ago, and her books consistently sell well. She has a series of wonderful, wonderful novels. I'll give you briefly the titles here. There's Home in the Morning, which was an award winner, Marching to Zion, One More River, and Undisturbed Peace. And she has a new book out that just launched recently, and I'm hoping that you'll invite her to appear on your program because she's such a lovely lady. It's called By the Rivers of Babylon. And Mary has a particular feel for the South. She writes between Mississippi and Georgia, stories that go back to the 1800s all the way up to today. And she fits her stories in with characters who either repeat in the stories or relatives and generational repeat. And they're wonderful examinations of human fallibility and the civil rights issues. And also, a lot of them are imbued with Jewish, I don't know the right word here, but all her novels deal with a lot of Jewish immigrants and the relatives of those Jewish immigrants who are still in the South doing business and finding that their understanding of the African-American troubles are something that they can deal with better than some of the other people that they come in contact with. And the protagonists in her book are, all of them are truly wonderful. And they're very exciting books, too.
So this, I've often said, a literary agent can be worth their weight in gold, because it is a difficult thing for authors nowadays to get through through all of the many, many, many submissions of and books that are loaded up on Amazon every day. So. The work of the agent, of how you get to a publisher, how does that work? What's your, do you just call them up and say, I've got a great book, or how do you go about doing that?
Well, Patsy, I'm an old guy, so I've been around at this job a long time. I mean, as we used to call them, Rolodex, my CRM database is 3,000 strong, so I have a system of drilling down to editors who are looking for works in the same genre, and then I call them up and talk to them and put a submission and proposal together, send it off, and then we talk again on the phone. And when they've read it, they come back with their feelings and their thoughts. And sometimes the better editors that I deal with will come back with, this author is wonderful, but the story has a problem here and here, and we go back to the author and explain that, and if they agree, they do a rewrite, and we resubmit it. It's a process. It's a process that we try and achieve some kind of cooperation with the right editor in the right house. My job has never been simply to find a publisher for works. My job is quite often involving finding the right editor who's going to enhance the book and enhance the author's possibilities.
And working with an author is something that, for new writers, it's a daunting task. There, are, sometimes authors don't like criticism, which I tell them, right from when they tell me, I finished the book, I want to send it to an editor. I say, well, you have to be tough. I mean, because they're going to be tough on you if they're a good editor.
Well, they should be. There was a wonderful story. Maya Angelou always used to tell this story about my favorite editor, Bob Loomis, who passed away a few years back. And when she first sent her first manuscript to Bob Loomis to read, 2 weeks later it came back to her in the mail, and she looked at the manuscript and she couldn't see any corrections or anything else, so she called up. And Bob says, well, no, I've made suggestions. And she said, well, I've looked at every page, and every once in a while there's a little squiggle in the margin. And he said, yes. And she said, what do I do? He said, the squiggle is to tell you that something in that paragraph doesn't work. And so she used to swear at him, saying, well, you couldn't tell me what it was that doesn't work. And he said, no, that's not my job. You're a brilliant writer. There's something in that paragraph that doesn't work. Go and find it. And in fact, all the books that he edited for her over the years were exactly the same way. And she was always very funny about his little squiggles in the margin. Now, other editors will go and slash and burn and make comments that are quite often hard to take. But the point of an editor is to highlight for the author those things that that editor thinks doesn't work. And it's up to the author to decide, yes, I agree or don't agree, but it's also meant in a constructive manner. Quite often I have to tell you that we'll get some manuscripts and the author has got a wonderful tale and it's a strong story, and it's usually this is in the nonfiction area, but boy, the voice is wrong, and I will edit the first 20 pages and say, this is where you're going wrong. And I've had authors say to me, well, you know nothing, I'm going somewhere else, and then a year later they come back to me and they say, okay, we reread it a year later and you're absolutely right, can we send it again? It's just because we do this day in, day out. Editors do this day in, day out. They know what is going to work in the marketplace. And at the end of the day, authors have to realize that there is a difference between writing something for your own enjoyment that you want to share with people and writing something for your own enjoyment that you want to be shared commercially with people. The commercial aspect requires a different kind of gauntlet than just publishing something on your own. And you have to be willing to take the sometimes tough criticism, but always constructive criticism that editors offer.